banks of the Colorado River in Lake Mead to the homes and businesses in Southern Nevada, welcome to Water Smarts, the podcast pumping from the heart of Las Vegas, where we engage with the experts who keep the water flowing throughout Southern Nevada. I'm Bronson Mack.
And I'm Crystal Zelke. From how we treat it, deliver it, use it, protect it, and conserve it, the Water Smarts podcast is all about water in Southern Nevada. We hope to make you a little smarter about the one thing that keeps us all connected. Water.
Hey, Crystal, how are you today?
I'm doing good. Trying to keep up on all the news and the headlines and all the things that the Water Authority has been in lately, which we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, there is a lot going on. You know, legislature that wrapped up this year passed AB 356, which is a very interesting legislation that is really going to help advance our water conservation efforts here in Southern Nevada. We're going to get into all of that. Today on the Water Smarts podcast, we are going to be joined by Nevada State Senator Fabian Doñate and Nevada State Assemblyman Howard Watts. They're going to be talking a little bit about that legislation, what it took to get that through the process, what it means for our state, and more specifically for us here in Southern Nevada. But we're going to start with Colby Pellegrino, who is the Deputy General Manager of Water Resources for the Southern Nevada Water Authority. She's going to give us a little bit more perspective on what this new legislation means and how it's going to help save water. Colby Pellegrino, welcome back to the Water Smarts podcast.
Hey, Bronson, I'm happy to be back. Thank you for having me.
Well, we always appreciate your time here on Water Smarts. And Colby, you know, recently Governor Sisolak signed Assembly Bill 356 into law. And Assembly Bill 356 targets non-functional grass, or what many of us just call decorative or ornamental, or I guess the better term might be useless grass. And AB 356 prohibits the use of Colorado River water to irrigate that type of grass, which ultimately means that grass is going to have to be replaced. Can you provide a little bit more detail for our listeners about this requirement and how much grass are we talking about?
Sure, Bronson. So I think that to set the stage for exactly what non-functional turf is, the easiest place to identify it is a median. You know, if there is grass in the middle of six lanes of traffic, nobody's having a picnic there. But it's true elsewhere that it might not be as obvious. Some places you drive around the valley and you have these long strips of turf right next to the road. And they do look pretty when you walk by sometimes. I personally think native plants look prettier, but nobody is coming to this sloped little hill of grass next to a six-lane road to play with their kids, to have a soccer game, or anything like that. So that's really the type of turf that we're talking about. And we estimate that there's about 4,000 acres of that type of grass in our community today.
Well, that makes sense then for AB 356 to be targeting that type of grass. I mean, you're talking about grass that is wrapping around commercial buildings or adjacent to parking lots or running down the side of a street. And there's so many other landscape options that are out there that use less water. And actually, as I think about it a little bit, water smart landscapes definitely more diverse than just plain grass landscape that you might see. But Colby, can you explain a little bit how much water are we talking about here? Because that's really what this is about. It's about the water savings. So if we are to replace this 4,000 or so acres of useless or decorative grass with water smart landscaping, how much water are we talking about saving?
In all of our studies, we show that in comparison to desert landscaping, turf uses about 55 gallons per square foot more than your average desert landscaping. So when you add up across this 4,000 acres, the amount of water savings we think we can net, it's about 29,000 acre feet of water a year. That's a little bit more than 10% of what we used last year. So a pretty significant savings in terms of the amount of water that will come back to us as a result of removing this non-functional turf. It's actually more than the entire Las Vegas Strip uses every year. So pretty significant, again, water savings for us. The one thing that I'll add to that too is we know that these narrow strips of turf are really inefficient to irrigate. So we actually may be saving a little bit more water than that when all is said and done.
Colby, you said that's about 10% of our water supply that is currently being used to irrigate this type of non-functional or decorative grass. That is amazing. And when you consider that the Las Vegas Strip as a whole uses about 7% of our community's total water supply, but they only consume about 3% of that water supply because the vast majority of their water use is indoors in the guest room, and we get to reclaim and reuse all of that water. It is just almost incomprehensible to think that grass that's lining our streets is using more water or consuming more water than the Las Vegas Strip. Unbelievable. Colby, over the past 20 years, the Water Authority has removed about 4,000 or a little more than 4,000 acres of grass through the Water Smart Landscape Program. And this new law is targeting just about that same amount. So can you explain a little bit about why this legislation is so beneficial in our efforts to replace the remaining decorative grass in Southern Nevada?
Sure, Bronson. I'm going to tackle that from two different standpoints. The first one being locally the challenges that we have, and the second one being kind of the bigger water supply picture. So here locally, we've been going after this useless grass for 20 years. And the reality is we don't have another 20 years that we should be sitting and wasting this water with everything that we know about the current drought and climate change. The other thing that people don't necessarily think of when we talk about taking out this useless grass is sometimes it's really hard for us to get to the right decision maker in a property to actually make the decision to take it out. So you think of an office complex where there's a property manager on site that has some ability to make decisions about maintaining the property, but they may be owned by a group that's not even in the state. And sometimes when you go through different levels of ownership, it's actually sometimes hard to find out exactly who owns the property and to get to the person making the decision. And we've been starting to do that. It's been very difficult. And I think we just finally reached the point where we've been really voluntary about this for 20 years. And enough is enough. This is the time where this turf needs to come out. It is a luxury that we cannot afford in terms of wasted water. The other side of that, Bronson, is our local water supply picture. So the Colorado River has been experiencing drought for an incredibly long time, 20 years. My entire career here at the Water District has been within drought on the Colorado River. People graduating high school and moving into college, their entire life we've been messaging the community that we're in drought. But we're at a level today in Lake Mead and Lake Powell, the two primary reservoirs, that's lower than it's ever been. We're down to less than a third of the storage capacity in those two reservoirs. And most of our projections show that even with average hydrology, because of how hot and how dry it is, we're not going to see the reservoirs coming up anytime soon. And that means we need to be prepared to take shortages on the Colorado River. Those shortages will reduce our water supply combined in January 2022 to the tune of about 7 billion gallons of water. So we really don't see a direct impact from that shortage because we've conserved enough to where we're using less today than what we're allocated on the river under that first shortage tier. But we need to double down. We need to do more. And we would like to continue to be proactive about conserving water instead of reactive. And with everything we're seeing on the river, that means that we really need to double down on those conservation efforts and really go after these things that don't make sense.
Well, Colby, you're really painting a picture here for really the importance of water conservation in Southern Nevada. I mean, that's following the watering restrictions, making sure that you're watering on the right days, that you're not watering out of compliance there, reporting water waste. And of course, if we've been talking about here, getting rid of that useless grass. But as we talk about conservation and what you shared there on shortages for the Colorado River, I'm sure that our listeners are interested in what's going to happen next with the Colorado River. We got shortages coming up. Those were all agreed to back in 2007. But there is another round of discussions with all of the Colorado River partners. So can you share with us a little bit about what's coming up with Colorado River coordination and with the other basin states over the next few years?
First, I'll share a kind of funny story as my neighbor came over after reading one of the recent articles in Lake Mead. And she was like, Colby, I feel like we don't have a plan and we need a plan. And I said to her, Carrie, we do have a plan. We've had a plan since 2007, and our water agency has been planning for it long before that. So we have a plan in place today that goes through 2026. And as Lake Mead's elevation falls, we take greater shortages. And should we get to a level where the existing shortages might not be enough to protect Lake Mead, we are required to come back to the table and talk about what additional steps we need to take. I just wanted to throw that out there, that there is a plan. We just don't hear about it because we haven't had to implement it yet. That's coming into play. But what's also happening on the river is because those guidelines expire in 2026, we are beginning negotiating with the other states and water users on the river to talk about what comes next. When we entered into the drought contingency plan agreements, which took effect in 2019, and the first year we operated under them was 2020, they were meant to be this temporary action that occurred until 2026, because this renegotiation was on the horizon. And we are really going to look at holistically what the future flows of the river are going to look like, what climate change and drought mean for the Colorado River. And we know, sitting here today and having experienced this 20-year drought, which is the worst drought in recorded history, that we need to do more. Not everyone on the river is doing the same amount to conserve right now. And there's a lot of different reasons for that. Maybe their priority within the state, maybe the water resources that are available to them. Their conservation might not look like our conservation. But the reality is, the future of the Colorado River is hotter and drier. And everyone needs to come back home, look in their house, and figure out what they can do to do more with less. We've shown that we can do that in this community. We are using less water today per capita and total withdrawals from the Colorado River than we were in 2002, despite our population growing by 52%. And that story is true for the urban areas in Arizona and in California that use Colorado River water. But we know that everyone needs to do more. And with 1.8% of the allocated water on the river, if we're going to have our voice heard, we really need to set the bar. And we need to continue to be the best that we can be when it comes to water conservation. We're the driest state in the nation. We are the driest large metropolitan city in the nation. And it's incumbent upon us to continue to set the bar when it comes to water conservation.
Yeah, and when we think about water conservation, it's not what is the water conservation that my neighbor is doing, or what are the conservation things that the park across the street are doing. It's really, what am I doing today to conserve? Am I following those watering restrictions? Can I scale back on the amount of water that I'm putting on my landscaping? Should I be reporting that water that is running down the gutter that I just drove by at the intersection? The answer is yes.
Exactly.
You should be reporting that water waste. And we need the entire community to continue to rally around water conservation and not just do your part, but really contribute. Do something more. Do something a little bit extra when it comes to conservation, especially with water outdoors. I find it really encouraging that AB 356 was able to pass the legislature with broad support. I mean, representatives from all of the political parties here in Southern Nevada and in Northern Nevada supported that legislation. It also had broad support from the business community and environmental groups. And we invited two of Nevada's key legislators with us here on the podcast today. We're going to hear from Senator Fabian Doñate and Assemblyman Howard Watts, who played an instrumental role, both of them, in getting this legislation through the process and over to the governor's desk. And joining us today on the Water Smarts podcast is Assemblyman Howard Watts, representing Assembly District 15 here in Southern Nevada. Assemblyman Watts, thank you so much for joining us on the Water Smarts podcast.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Bronson. Glad to be here.
So, Assemblyman, I think that it's important for our listeners to kind of understand, and I know that obviously a lot of your constituents know who you are and know your background and your rich history here in Southern Nevada, but maybe not all of our listeners do. You have been a major player, not just in Southern Nevada, but in the state of Nevada, in protecting our state's natural resources, protecting our public lands throughout Nevada, and not just as an elected leader, which you are today, but prior to your life in public office. You know, you worked with the Great Basin Water Network, and you did a lot on voter registration efforts in the past, and you've really established yourself as a community leader and a supporter of public interest causes. I mean, you've also been a huge proponent of water conservation. Can you just help our listeners understand kind of where do you come from in regards to conservation? Why has this been such a cause for you, and why is it important, not just for Southern Nevada, but Nevada as a whole?
Thank you so much for the kind and generous words in the introduction. I appreciate it. You know, I was born and raised here in Las Vegas, so I deeply care about the community. I've fallen in love with not only Southern Nevada, but the whole state as I've had the opportunity to travel around and visit the different areas and really just take in the beauty that's across the state and the natural resources. And particularly as I kind of got into college, I started learning a lot more about our natural resources and about the policy that guides them. And it really just became a passion for me. And so that's why, whether it was kind of as an activist, whether it was as an advocate with different nonprofit organizations, and now as a legislator, that I'm committed to trying to conserve the beautiful spaces and all of the resources that support them, because everything is tied up together. We have our communities, but there's also plants, animals, our landscapes, our habitat, and all of us rely on water in order to survive. So figuring out how we can advance water conservation has really been a passion for me, because it is a scarce resource. You know, we're in the driest state in the country. We get the least precipitation of any state in the United States. Las Vegas, I think, is the driest major metropolitan area in the United States. We get 4 inches on average, and we haven't been hitting average recently. So to me, the sustainability of our community into the future and our ability to enjoy all that this state has to offer depends on making sure that we have water resources available for our future. And one of the easiest ways that we can do that, because as you know, most of Nevada's residents depend on the Colorado River, a river that's shared among 7 states and the nation of Mexico, supports huge amount of economic activity, people, agriculture, and it's a system that's under stress, and it's not very easy to add water to the system. So the biggest way that we can make sure that we can sustain ourselves into the future is through conservation. Not only is it logistically the easiest, it's also the most cost effective. And so in my first legislative session in 2019, worked to establish statewide standards, building on some of the great work that has already happened in Southern Nevada, but making sure that we implement that as a baseline across all of our communities to make sure that we're being water smart with some of our indoor water fixtures, and making sure that all communities in this state are building in plans to conserve water, make sure we're not losing water through leaks in our systems. And then when we had the opportunity to move this initiative forward with AB 356 this session to help save about 10% of our state's Colorado River allocation, I couldn't have been happier to be involved in helping to move that through the process at the legislature.
So as that's moving through, and obviously you have the opportunity to hear from the public and to hear from your colleagues with regards to their thoughts on the bill, what did you hear? Did you hear a lot of opposition to the bill? Did you hear a lot of support from the bill? Like, what did you hear out there as you were moving that through?
I think overall, we heard a lot of support. People recognize that we live in a desert and that water is a scarce resource. And so people really do want to see conservation action. And I think the concerns that got brought up were pretty easily addressed, because again, this is ornamental turf. This is grass that no one is using for recreation. A lot of people say the only time someone steps on it is when they're mowing it. Once people realize we're not going to go forcibly rip out someone's yard, we're not getting rid of the park that you love. This is, you know, what we see in certain areas on medians and other areas where it's just sitting there taking up water that we need to sustain our community moving forward. It was impressive how much support there was for it from the community, from conservation organizations, but also from members of the business community who don't necessarily always love getting told that they have to make changes, but understanding that it's a process that we want to support them through, that we want their feedback in how it's developed. And ultimately, they also know that in order to continue to sustain their business and their community, that this is the next step that we need to take. And again, this is something that we've been working on for a long time. Of course, the Water Authority has had its incentive program to help people remove turf and replace it with water smart landscapes, along with so many other conservation initiatives. And just again, looking big picture at the drought situations that we've found ourselves in over the last 20 years and the lowering at Lake Mead and Lake Powell further up the Colorado River, I think a lot of folks realize that this is the next step that we need to take in order to ensure that our community is sustainable for the long term.
I have to assume, based on all of the work that you have done over the years to protect the public interest and to really support the community as a whole, just want to get a sense from you. How does it feel to have some legislation that you worked on ultimately make its way through the legislative process, arrive at the governor's desk, receive that signature, and ultimately become a law? How does that make you feel?
It feels incredible, Bronson. It really does. Being a legislator is tough work. Here in the state of Nevada, we're a citizen legislature, so we only go into session every other year for a few months where we have to set our budget and pass laws for 2 years. We also have to work our regular day jobs outside of that in order to help pay the bills. Let me be clear, it's the honor and privilege of a lifetime, but it's hard work during those 4 months. We put in long days looking at a lot of different pieces of policy. And when I get to see something like AB 356 get signed into law, it really makes it all worth it and reminds me why I decided to serve the state of Nevada. Working on this bill in particular is really exciting for me, not only because of what it's going to do for our community, but because I think it is the next stage of setting Southern Nevada and the state of Nevada out as a leader and demonstrating to other states along the Colorado River and in the West of what conservation initiatives we need to take on to make sure that we have a sustainable future.
Well, Assemblyman Watts, we really appreciate your time and joining us here on the Water Smarts podcast. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your service. And I hope that you get a little time off and a little relaxation now that the session has wrapped. And congratulations on a successful session.
Thanks so much, Bronson.
And also joining us today on the podcast, we have Nevada Senator Fabian Donate, who chairs the Senate Natural Resources Committee and who had a key role in the passage of AB 356. Senator, welcome to our Water Smarts podcast.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Before we talk a little bit about the new law, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself? Give us a little of your history and background here in Nevada.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for inviting me to this podcast today. I'm really excited for the opportunity just to even talk about some of the cool things that happen in natural resources at the legislature. I am Fabian Donate, and I've been appointed to the State Senate back in February. So I represent Senate District 10, which covers parts of the Las Vegas Strip and Central East Las Vegas. They usually put the new freshman in the Senate to chair natural resources. So that's the lucky committee that I got with earlier this session, which is really cool because I got the chance to learn a lot about some of the issues that help out rural counties particularly, and also things that I'm passionate about, which is public health. My background stems in the field of public health. That's what I've studied for the last few years, and I just completed my graduate degree in this field. With that background, it was really instrumental diving into the issues like climate change, issues that we all face, and that would be at stake in the Senate Committee on Natural Resources. I got involved within the last few months on these issues, but my background mostly is in the field of public health.
Got it. Well, congratulations on getting your graduate degree. So you were an early champion of AB 356, which is legislation to remove non-functional turf in areas like streetscapes and medians, sidewalks, sometimes those big entryways into neighborhoods, not in residents' yards. I just want to be clear about that. And the bill was unanimously passed out of the Senate Natural Resources Committee, which you were the chair of. Can you tell us why this legislation was so important to you and to Southern Nevada?
Thank you so much for that question, Crystal. I want to give just a quick context as some of the conversations that happened before this bill came forward and how it came to fruition, because I think that's important sometimes to understand the context. When I first got appointed, I mentioned to a lot of the representatives, both from departments like DCNR, the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, and to respective members of the Southern Nevada Water Authority that I was particularly interested in water policy. And my inclination to that was because during my undergrad, I wrote a few papers as to the boundaries of international diplomacy and how that affected water resources and the things that could result when we have shortages. And as we know, when we have water shortages, that creates a big public health crisis, whether in terms of migration or lack of food access. I also had the opportunity to travel to Israel when I was in my undergrad. And so I saw a lot of the innovation and the investments that they made in water technology over there. Given that exposure, I knew that that was an issue that we had to prioritize, at least in some sort of conversation within this session, which led to this bill, AB 356. At that point in time, representatives from the Southern Nevada Water Authority asked me, is this something that you would be interested in? And I said, absolutely. For me, particularly as a young state senator, all I ever have known in my entire life is that bathtub ring in Lake Mead. And even within the last few days, scrolling through the news and social media, we already know the devastating effects happening at this moment because of the drought. I think I read within the last few days that Lake Mead is approaching its lowest point, or it's meeting its record lowest point, and it's going to go even beyond that because of the drought that we're experiencing right now. So to leave the legislature without a landmark piece of legislation was not an option, because we can't wait 2 years because we're already behind on water conservation. Luckily, in Nevada, we've already been pioneers in this space. But of course, as we go into negotiations with our water usage in the Colorado River, we need to have every tool that we can at our disposal so that we can address water conservation in its entirety. And this bill, I felt, was a really good bill to pave the way for that conversation. It wasn't really controversial. I think that it had a lot of buy-in from community groups and from the business groups, which is always a good thing. And it sets us up for future negotiations where we have taken steps that other states have not, that other people fear taking these steps, but we know it's the right thing to do. And so that's why I was an early supporter of this bill. And speaking with members of my committee, I think they felt the same way, especially for those in Northern Nevada, because a lot of the issues and the water usage that we use in Southern Nevada affects the entire state. So any way that we can make progress on this step is an important thing to remember. And I think that's what paved the way for this bill passing.
You bring up so many great points, and I really like how you're reminding us the importance of water to all of us, for public health, for our economy, just for our general livelihood, how much we depend on it. We can't be without it. So it's important to protect it. Being a freshman senator, how does it feel for you personally to be part of such a landmark legislation? And as you pointed out, that not just will impact us here in Southern Nevada and the state, but in other communities, especially in our region where, you know, the western areas dealing with this drought.
I don't think it has hit me yet just how important this legislation has been, because a lot of the work that we're going to be doing within the next few, it's going to be a slow process. We set out a time frame of 5 years to get this bill done, and working with community groups and different stakeholders, it's going to take us a little bit just to get to a point where we can finally conserve just by removing non-functional turf. So for me, I don't know how to feel right now because I'm still processing just how valuable this legislation has been. And it's always a good sign for me because by the time it came over to the Senate side and we had done our hearing for it, we didn't hear many complaints. The few complaints that we heard were dog owners being upset for not having the turf for their dogs and that this bill didn't go far enough. That's good criticism for me because that incentivizes and motivates all of us to keep going at it and to keep going further. And I know that through this piece of legislation, I'm inspired to engage in that conversation and to keep going, because this is just the first step. And if it means taking off grass to better serve our state, then let's do that. Let's definitely push forward for that conversation and do something about it. It was a very simple decision, both for Chairman Watts and for myself. And I look forward to seeing what different things can come out of this.
Well, Senator, we really appreciate all your hard work and time you put into AB 356 and the legislative session. And we really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule today to talk to us on the Water Smarts podcast. We know you're busy, so good luck out there.
Thank you so much.
Well, it was really great to hear from Assemblyman Watts and Senator Joniate. We thank them very much for giving us some time here on the Water Smarts podcast. They played a key role in helping to advance the water efficiency here of Southern Nevada. Now, Colby, with AB 356, we know that it's going to help reduce water usage where there is really a lot of opportunity to save, and that's that water usage outdoors by removing that decorative, ornamental, or non-functional turf, whatever we want to characterize it as right now. So can you just share a little bit about how SNWA plans to implement this process going forward and sort of rolling that out to the community?
Sure, Bronson. The legislation actually required that we convene a citizens advisory committee, and it spelled out the representation on that committee. It includes representatives for commercial properties, governmental properties, multifamily housing, golf courses, and there's actually two HOA representatives. And I believe the last is an environmental organization. And what that committee is going to do is come together and really help us go through sector by sector and say, this is what non-functional turf looks like in this sector, so that we have some really black and white rules for people to be able to look at and say, okay, if I'm an HOA owner, I know that this is the turf in my community that needs to come out. And then we hope to take those recommendations from the Citizens Advisory Committee to our board before the end of the year sometime. And then they would be formally adopting definitions for what turf needs to be removed by the end of 2026.
So through that process, I'm assuming then that like entrances to HOAs that have grass, that is the kind of grass that's going to fall under AB 356. If there's grass that's sitting outside of the front of, I don't know, a golf course that's not part of the playing area, or even maybe outside of a school or something of that nature, grass that isn't necessarily used for that recreational purpose, this committee is going to help define and make sure that that kind of grass is included in this process.
Exactly.
Well, it looks like the Water Authority isn't really letting any of this grass, pardon the pun, grow under its feet. But, you know, this advisory committee will be comprised of representatives from all types of properties and all types of sectors to ensure that this law is in full compliance. The committee, obviously, as you've indicated, is going to make some recommendations, and then the Water Authority staff will get to working their outreach activities and making sure that these properties know about this law, know about what the requirements are and what the expectations are. And I also expect that SNWA will start offering some help with some of these conversions through the Water Smart Landscape Rebate Program. Is that program still going to be effective here for these property owners, Colby?
So yes, Bronson, the Water Smart Landscape Rebate Program has been a cornerstone of our conservation efforts since 2000. And that's where businesses and homeowners that want to participate in removing their turf get $3 a square foot for the first 10,000 square feet of turf that they remove and $1.50 a square foot thereafter. As we sit here today, that rebate is available to everyone in the community. We are not going to increase that rebate, and we have limited resources and a capital plan that includes funding for water conservation that we're going to be very closely monitoring. I can't guarantee you that we'll continue to rebate all the way to 2026 because this is now a requirement, but we will today. We're offering that rebate, and we plan to continue to do so at least for the next couple of years. But I think it's incumbent upon everyone to figure out what they need to do now and adopt early instead of waiting until the end.
I think that's a really good point, especially when we're considering the fact that we're talking about some public dollars here that are being made available to really conserve water, save water resources for the community. This is sort of an act now situation. If you want to get your project in line, get a $3 rebate for the first 10,000 square feet, $1.50 beyond that, get your project in, go to our website, visit snwa.com. Is that the spot where we're supposed to go, Colby?
Yeah, and there's one other important thing. You have to call us before you remove your turf if you want to get the rebate. That's our number one complaint. We need to have somebody set eyes on it and measure it before it comes out. So sign up first. We'll get somebody out there and then get started. But snwa.com is the best place to go to get all the information about that incentive program as well as some of the other incentive programs that we offer.
Perfect. Make sure you get your project in, get approved before you start removing grass. That is really important because you don't want to take out that grass and suddenly realize you didn't follow the steps properly and you won't be eligible for that rebate. You know, we've mentioned previously that AB 356 does not target decorative grass in residential front yards, despite the fact that there's still about 1,000 acres of unused grass that is residing in those front yards in our neighborhoods. So, Colby, what do our listeners who still have that grass in those front yards, what do they need to be doing? Should they be getting rid of that water-thirsty grass as well, and would they qualify for the rebate too?
Yes. If you are not using your front yard turf, if there's nobody out there playing in it, your kids aren't there throwing a baseball, that's turf that should come out. A lot of the desert landscaping options look really beautiful. Homeowners are eligible for projects just like businesses are. It's that same $3 a square foot. If for some reason you're choosing to keep your turf, I would say follow the mandatory watering restrictions. You do not need to water your grass in the winter the same amount as you do in these 117 degree days. 6 days a week in summer, never on Sunday, 3 days a week in the fall and spring, and 1 day a week in winter. We could save a huge amount of water, about half of what we can save by taking out all this turf, by just getting people to increase their compliance with that seasonal watering schedule. Check your yard. Make sure you don't have leaks. Make sure your sprinklers are spraying where they're supposed to and that we're not watering asphalt, concrete, and cinder block walls. It'll save you money in the long run on the maintenance of those hardscapes as well. Install a water smart controller. I have one. I control it from my smartphone. And when we have these monsoon rains go through, it takes me about 10 seconds to delay my clock for 24 hours, saving me water and money on my water bill. Those are probably the three most meaningful things that we can have people do. In addition, report water waste. If you see people watering on the wrong day, watering midday in the summer, water spraying off their property, or a leak, every municipality has either an app or an online way to report that water waste, and we encourage you to do so.
Fantastic stuff there. Follow those seasonal watering restrictions. Make sure you check your irrigation system so that they are not misaligned. Get a water smart controller. Really like that recommendation, Colby. I have one myself, and it's pretty awesome to be able to set your sprinkler clock from the comfort of your couch through your smartphone. And we're all so familiar with using our smartphones anyway. It's really the way to do it now. You don't actually have to go out to that garage. Colby, at the end of each podcast, we do ask listeners to submit questions. Sometimes we get some, sometimes we don't. But today we actually do. And so I would like to bounce one of these questions off you. It's a blind item coming your way, and hopefully you're game to take it. You up for it?
Of course I am.
All right. And this one comes from Rosalie, who asks, why new developments are allowed to have so many plants and trees, and whether we've ever considered limiting the number of plants that can be planted in any new developments?
That's a great question, and I think it comes down to perception. So again, drip irrigated landscapes use far less water than grass. All of the plants and trees on average in a drip irrigated landscape are using 55 gallons per square foot less than that turf. And we want shade from trees and plants. We don't want to live somewhere that's rock. I live here too. My kids live here. I am born and raised in Las Vegas, and I don't want to drive through the rock jungle. There's lots of very beautiful desert plants out there and trees that are well adapted to this climate. But those trees also serve another purpose, which is shade. And shade helps us combat the urban heat island effect, where cities, because of all of the asphalt, tend to stay hotter at night than they used to previously. And shade is the number one way to combat that. So if we want to do the responsible thing, it's to get more desert-adapted trees out there than we have today. And that will help all of us combat those really hot days in the summer of the future, too.
And Colby, our last question is sent to us from Parker. And Parker wants to know, how come we put so much emphasis on water conservation outdoors? Shouldn't we also be saving water indoors as well? I love that question. It's a really good one. I'm going to fire that one over to you, Colby, if you'd like to take it.
Sure. And I like answering this one too. there's a lot of reasons that it makes sense to do indoor water conservation. It helps on carbon footprint, energy costs, the amount of chemicals that we use as an organization. But since we take all of the water that hits a drain, treat it, and return it to Lake Mead, anything used indoors in that way does not count against the amount of water that we're able to take from the Colorado River each year. So we focus our efforts on the area that has the biggest impact on the Colorado River, and that's the water that we use outdoors in landscaping and in cooling.
I love that. All of the indoor water that gets used here gets recycled, safely returned back to Lake Mead, extends our water supply. Colby Pellegrino, Deputy General Manager of Water Resources for the Southern Nevada Water Authority, thank you so much for joining us here and educating us a little bit on water smarts.
Thank you, Bronson. I look forward to working with the community as we implement these new water conservation measures.
Well, Crystal, another jam-packed Water Smarts podcast here. Great having Senator Doñate, Assemblyman Watts, and Deputy General Manager Colby Pellegrino with us today to talk a little bit about this turf conversion legislation, huh? What'd you think?
Well, it's very interesting to me. For one, I'm really interested to see where this takes us as far as being a leader. We already are a leader in water conservation efforts, you know, in our country for sure and worldwide. And I'm curious to see who might follow in our footsteps or who might collaborate with us. I just think this is really important stuff. And I'm interested in it.
I think it also just makes a whole lot of sense. You know, when you consider the fact that we're talking about grass that is surrounding parking lots at grocery stores or grass that is outside of a dentist office or outside of a strip mall. I mean, it's grass that is just sitting there soaking up our water supply. And when you put it in perspective that it's that kind of grass that nobody is using that is drinking 10% of our total water supply, it really does make sense to get rid of it. You know, it's 5 years, so we're going to be talking quite a bit about this going forward. Hopefully we can get most of that grass out within the next couple of years and it doesn't take the full five, but this is what it takes to help ensure that we've got reliable water supplies here in the desert, because saving water is desert living. Well, that's it for this episode of the Water Smarts Podcast. We hope you subscribe and listen next time. And if you have any questions, you can send them our way via email. Send it to watersmarts@snwa.com or visit us on our website at snwa.com. We'll make sure to respond back to your question with an answer, and maybe we'll even talk about it on a future episode. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you here next time on Water Smarts.